Analog ranging, the Athlon Argos, and avoiding overpressure this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday, our first question comes from Joshua. And Joshua asks, besides using mil dots, are you familiar with any other analog methods of ranging targets? Joshua, mil dots obviously is a real quick and easy way to range a target if you know a known dimension on the target, either your height or your width of the target. Then you can use the mil relation formula and back into what your mil ranging is, or what your range to the target is. We'll go ahead and leave a link down in the description below on where you can go to our website. I did a little write-up on how to actually do range estimation with a mil dot reticle. Josh is asking about how to do that without mil dots, and there are a couple of different methods. Obviously, the easiest, although the most expensive method, is to just purchase a laser rangefinder. There are quite a few rangefinders out there that are in the intermediate price range that will go just shy of 1,000 yards. Some of the more expensive ones will get over 1,000 yards, and then when you get to the top end, they will range as far as shoulder-fired rifles can accurately fire at this point. So that is the most sure, fastest, and easiest way to range targets. But again, that is the most expensive. So if you don't have mil dots and you don't have a laser rangefinder, there are still some other ways to range your target. One of the quickest is if you're at a range that has definite markers, just look at what your range markers are. A lot of times they don't have them marked, but they may have a target rack set out, and you can utilize those as landmarks. Maybe somebody else there actually knows what the range to the target is, or you can do recon by fire. You can shoot on that target enough to get your dope dialed in, and then you can look at your dope card and see what the range is. I call that recon by fire. So once you get that written down, now when you return to that and you're shooting from the same firing point, you know what the distance is to that. So jot that stuff down in your data book and you can refer back to it. Another way that is less precise but very often used for a down and dirty firing solution is just to visualize. Most of us know about what 100 yards looks like because that's a football field for us. So a lot of us here in the U.S. that play American football can visualize in our head what the distance is for a football field. And you can just lay those increments over terrain and get a rough idea of how far away the target is. Now, that does cause problems if the terrain is sloping, if you have a rise or a dead space in your distance, that can cause you to be long or short. And also, this method doesn't really work beyond 400, 500 yards. It starts to get very, very imprecise when you go further than that. But again, that combined with recon by fire can get you a range to a target. So next we have pace count. So if you know a 100-yard distance and you go out and pace it off, obviously on a cold range, you can then go off and pace off to your target line, and you can get a somewhat accurate gauge on the range to the target, again, depending upon how far away the target actually is and how accurate your pace count is. We use pace counts in navigation and land nav quite a bit, and I got to the point when I was doing it all the time that my pace count was fairly accurate. Now, again, if you have rolling terrain, then that's going to cause some issues with your pace count. If you have mud, if you have high vegetation, that kind of thing, then your pace count can be off a bit. But again, this is really for rough estimation, not precise first shot hits. Then, of course, if you have flat ground, you can use a measuring wheel. Those can be purchased on Amazon, or most cop shops will have them, and they're for measuring out distances for engineering purposes or accident investigation, that kind of thing. It's just a stick with a big wheel on the end of it and a counter, and as the wheel turns, it increases the counter increments, and that counter is calibrated in meters or yards or whatever the individual device happens to be set up for. That's a little bit of a cumbersome way. Again, a lot of times on rifle ranges, we're shooting over grass and broken terrain, so that's not going to be super accurate, but it may be an option if you have a really flat, nice mode range that you're setting targets out on. Then we have Map Recon, and this is probably the one that I would use the most. Most of us have these cell phones that have GPS built into them, so you can usually locate what your point is. If you have the ability to walk out to the target, then you can locate where the target is at, and depending upon what map app you're using, a lot of times you can get a range from point A to point B, and that can be very, very accurate within a yard or two or a meter or two, depending upon what your GPS signal is at the time and what device that you're using. If you don't have that level and you want to do it old school, you can actually go to the USGS website and you can print out maps from their website. They'll have a scale on the maps. You can get a ruler or a protractor, draw your lines on the map from your targets to where you're at, and then measure those lines. And again, depending upon your skill with the map and compass, you can get very, very accurate ranges that way. So again, a couple of ideas there. Laser rangefinders are really the best. The prices are coming down considerably. And if you like to do it old school, then MilDot range estimation is really fun. But as you get out to greater and greater distances, that becomes less precise as well. So hopefully that gives you some options to look at for analog range finding. And if you guys have any questions on any of those things that I just discussed, go ahead and leave them in the comments section down below or shoot them to us on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll try to get a little bit more in depth. If you guys really have one of those that you're really interested in, we may break it out and do a separate Q&A on that specific topic. And our next question comes from Daniel, and Daniel asks, how's the Athlon Argos long-term been going? Well, that is the Athlon Argos BTR 8-34 that I have sitting here in front of me. And as you can see, it's mounted on our Ruger 1022 in the Macmillan A522 stock. And it has been working very well in this setup. Now, remember, this is a $360 scope. The scope is rarely used above 20 to 24 power. When you get up into that 34 power, it gets really milky. I don't find that really useful. I don't enjoy how coarse the reticle gets at that point and how milky the sight picture gets at that point. So I will usually keep it at lower magnification, especially on this rig right here. Overall, though, it is tracked fairly accurately for us. There is a little bit of lash in the turrets. I'm not super happy about when you set the turrets, because they are splined turrets, you can get a half hash increment occasionally, which means that that indicator line does not line up exactly with a hash mark that is on the turret. You'll have it off to one side or off to the other side. So at any point in time, you can be half 1/10 of a mil off. Now with 22s at 100 yards and in, it's really not a big deal. But if you're trying to make an absolutely precise first round hit on something, then having that half hash and accidentally being to one side or the other on your zero or on your dope, that can be a big deal, and it can be a bigger deal the further out you go. The parallax on the scope is actually great. It adjusts down to 15 yards and, of course, up to infinity. So that allows you on a 22 to get nice and close and get that really close focus and get that razor sharp sight picture. Now, the parallax lines do not line up exactly with the hash mark or the indicator on the side of the scope, but that's fairly common. There are a ton of factors that can go into dialing that parallax out, to include your eye, the power, the magnification that the scope is set at, the ocular focus, all this stuff can go into causing that to be off one side or the other. A lot of scope manufacturers no longer mark their parallax turrets with actual numbers. They'll put lines or dots or something on it. The Athlon here is marked with actual yardages. And I really appreciate that because that allows me to remember where I need to be. Now, I can get it dialed in and get the parallax adjusted until it's parallax free and remember that that's about where it needs to be, that maybe it needs to be, you know, just a hair past the 50 or just a hair over the 50 to be parallax free, and get there quickly instead of trying to remember if it's a large dot or the short line or whatever. So I like that they did that. One thing that I have noticed with this scope, though, is very often where the reticle is actually parallax-free, and that means where it's anchored to the target. When you move your head around, the crosshair should look like it's painted on the target. When you have parallax induced in the system, when you move your head around, the crosshair will appear to float back and forth over the target. That is parallax. That's the visual indicator that you have parallax. When you dial the parallax adjustment, you should dial it until that reticle is anchored on the target. Now, the trick is that depending upon the quality of the scope, depending upon a myriad of other factors, it may or may not be your sharpest focus sight picture. And very often with this scope, I find that when I am focused to where the reticle and the target are razor sharp, then I have some parallax in the system. When I focus in to where I am parallax free, then the target is just a little bit blurry on it. So that's just something to keep in mind. It's something that seems to be more prevalent on lower price point scopes than higher price point scopes. But overall, for this application, I think this is a good scope. I would go for the lower magnification version, the 6-24, instead of the higher 8-34, because I really don't think you're gaining a lot with this high of magnification, since it's not really a pleasing sight picture when it's cranked out. So currently, that's where we're at on this. We have the Helos BTR in that is going to get swapped onto the 300 Win Mag. I'm going to run it on the 300 Win Mag for about 20, 30 rounds, and then I'm probably going to swap it onto here to replace this, and then run it on the 22 for a little while. Because again, I think these scopes are great options for the 22 rifles. I just really want to see how it'll handle the 300 Win Mag to begin with. And that will be a totally separate review. But so far, for the price point and for the application, I'm fairly satisfied with the Argos BTR in this setup. If you guys have any more questions about the Argos BTR, again, please leave them in the comment section down below. Then our last question is from Jason. And Jason asks, when developing loads, how do you find out if you're over pressure for circumstances beyond your control? For example, my 6.5 Creedmoor load is awesome for 80 degrees. But what happens if it rains and I get some moisture on the ammo? I'd like to find out way before a match if that's a problem. Does that make sense? Well, Jason, I'm going to put it in this perspective. Overpressure is always under your control, with the exception of possibly a bore obstruction. If you have a bore obstruction, that could be overpressure that's beyond your control. But everything else is under your control because you control the charge weight that you are putting in that cartridge. We'll see guys very often that will find an accuracy node at the ragged edge of pressure and decide to go with that because they are getting added velocity. Added velocity results in less drop and less wind drift. So they'll run the ragged edge of pressure to get the higher performance. Then, of course, if you do that on a 50-degree day and then you get a 110-degree Arizona heat day, you're going to be well into overpressure. You're going to be popping primers. You may end up having headspace or head separations and all kinds of other nasty stuff. So you need to leave that safety margin. Even when you work up on a warm day, you never can tell when it's going to rain, when you may get grit, extra nonsense in your chamber, maybe end up with a carbon ring in there that starts to up your pressure level a little bit. So always leave that safety measure. If you leave a good bit of headroom so that you're not pushing pressure, then if you get wet cartridges, it's not going to be that big of a deal. If you get a heat spike, it's not going to be that big of a deal. Now, how much of a difference you're going to get, that is going to depend upon what powder you're using and what cartridge you're using it in. So there are no hard and fast rules on it. I just like to work up, find out where my pressure is, and then come down and get the next lower accuracy node below that pressure limit. And that usually gives me enough headspace in other conditions to not allow me to go over pressure. And then as you're shooting, as the weather changes, as you go into the summer months, if you're trying to stay at the peak of performance, you should be chronographing as you go anyway, paying attention to what your barrel wear is doing, and you should be able to see if those loads start to get a little bit hot. You start to get a little bit sticky on the bolt, etc. Then again, that's an indicator that you need to back it down. But again, no hard and fast rules, just do not run the ragged edge of pressure, or you're going to end up reaping the consequences eventually. So I know that's probably not what a lot of guys are looking for. It would be nice if we had a hard rule that said you find pressure, drop back down 2 grains, and then there you're at. But due to the way harmonics work, how individual rifles work, how individual powder and bullet combinations work, there really isn't any hard and fast rule that I've found or that I've even heard. Just look for those accuracy nodes and drop down and choose one that is below maximum pressure. And that's it for this Mail Call Mondays. Wanted to comment real quick, because every time I show a rig like this, somebody will ask about what this little guy is here. They're commonly called cattails. This specific one is a breakaway coaster, and these are actually designed for fishing tackle to hold reels onto rods, and they are fairly cheap on Amazon. We'll leave a link down below, and they work great as cattails on scopes. And as you can see, I can run this to either side and not get in the way. And on scopes that have a little bit stickier magnification wheel like we have on the Argos here, it's nice to be able to have this guy up here so that you can just quickly bang your scope from side to side and get from that max magnification down to lower magnification without messing up your shooting position much. So they're real handy to have. They don't fit on everything, but they fit on a wide variety of scopes, so you can afford to have a couple of extra around and just screw them onto whatever works, cut them off. A lot of times, depending upon where you cut them off, you can use one on a variety of different scopes. That's it for the questions for this Mail Call Mondays, but we are releasing this on Memorial Day. At least I hope this will get out on Memorial Day. So I do want to take a minute to point out that this isn't National Barbecue Day. This isn't National Get Drunk and Act Like a Fool Day. This is a day for those of us to remember our service members who have passed and can no longer be with us, who have given their life in defense of freedom. So to all out there who have lost friends and family, thank you very much. I'm sorry for your loss, and we need to keep those people in our memories so they live forever. That's it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys have any questions or comments, leave them in the comments section below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you like the episode, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, get out and shoot.